Sazed's feet kicked up clumps of it as he moved to the top of a hill. He looked down on the valley that contained the pits, the place where Kelsier's wife had been murdered, the place where the survivor had been born. It was now the home of the Terrace people. There were few of them remaining. They had never been a very large population, and the coming of the mists and the difficult trek down to the central dominance had claimed many lives. There were perhaps 40,000 of them left, and a good many of the men were eunuchs, like Sazed. Sazed moved down the slope toward the valley. It had been a natural place to settle the Terrace people. During the days of the Lord Ruler, hundreds of slaves had worked here, watched over by hundreds more soldiers. That had ended when Kelsier had returned to the pits and destroyed their ability to produce atium. However, the pits still had the buildings and infrastructure that had supported them during their working days. There was plenty of fresh water and some shelter. The Terrace people had improved on this, building other structures across the valley, making what was once the most terrifying of prison camps into a pastoral group of villages. Even as Sazed walked down the hillside, he could see people brushing away the ash from the ground, letting the natural plant life poke through to provide grazing for the animals. The scrub that formed the dominant foliage in the central dominance was a resilient, hardy group of plants, and they were adapted to ash and didn't need as much water as farm crops. That meant that the Terrace people actually had easier lives than most. They were herdsmen, as they had been even during the centuries before the Lord Ruler's ascension. A hardy, short-legged breed of sheep mulled about on the hills, chewing down the uncovered stalks of scrub. "The Terrace people," Sazed thought, "living lives easier than most. What a strange world it has become." His approach soon attracted attention. Children ran from their parents, and heads poked from shacks. Sheep began to gather around Sazed as he walked, as if hoping that he had come bearing treats of some sort. Several aged men rushed up the hillside, moving as quickly as their gnarled limbs would allow. They, like Sazed, still wore their steward's robes, and, like Sazed, they kept them cleaned of ash, showing the colorful V-shaped patterns that ran down the fronts. Those patterns had once indicated the noble house that the steward served.
"Lord Sazed," one of the men said eagerly.
"Your Majesty," said another.
"Your Majesty."
"Please," Sazed said, raising his hands, "do not call me that."
The two aged stewards glanced at each other.
"Please, Master Keeper, let us get you something warm to eat."
Yes, the ash was black. No, it should not have been. Most common ash has a dark component, but is just as much gray or white as it is black. Ash from the ash mounds, it was different. Like the mists themselves, the ash covering our land was not truly a natural thing. Perhaps it was the influence of ruin's power, as black as preservation was white. Or perhaps it was simply the nature of the ash mounts, which were designed and created specifically to blast ash and smoke into the sky.
19. "Get up." Everything was dark. "Get up." Spook opened his eyes. Everything seemed so dull, so muted. He could barely see. The world was a blur, and he felt numb, dead. Why couldn't he feel?
"Spook, you need to get up."
The voice, at least, was clear. Yet everything else felt muddy. He couldn't quite manage to think. He blinked, groaning quietly. What was wrong with him? His spectacles and cloth were gone. That should have left him free to see, but everything was so dark. He was out of tin. There was nothing burning in his stomach. The familiar flame, a comforting candle within, was no longer there. It had been his companion for over a year, always there. He'd feared what he was doing, but he had never let it die. And now it was gone. That was why everything seemed so dull. Was this really how other people lived? How he used to live? He could barely see. The sharp, rich detail he'd grown accustomed to was gone. The vibrant colors and crisp lines. Instead, everything was bland and vague. His ears felt clogged. His nose... he couldn't smell the boards beneath him. Couldn't tell the species of wood by scent. Couldn't smell the bodies that had passed. Couldn't feel the thumpings of people moving about in other rooms. And he was in a room. He shook his head, sitting up, trying to think. Immediately, a pain in his shoulder made him gasp. The wound had not been cared for. He remembered the sword piercing him near the shoulder. That was not a wound one recovered from easily. Indeed, his left arm didn't seem to work right, one of the reasons he was having so much trouble rising. "You've lost a lot of blood," the voice said. "You'll die soon, even if the flames don't take you. Don't bother to look for the pouch of tin at your belt. They took that."
"Flames?" Spook croaked, blinking.
How did people survive in a world that was this dark?
"Can't you feel them, Spook? They're near."
There was a light nearby, down a hallway. Spook shook his head, trying to clear his mind. "I'm in a house," he thought. "A nice one, a nobleman's house. And they're burning it down." This finally gave him motivation to stand, though he immediately dropped again, his body too weak, his mind too fuzzy, to keep him on his feet.
"Don't walk," the voice said.
Where had he heard that voice before? He trusted it.
"Crawl," it said.
Spook did as commanded, crawling forward.
"No, not toward the flames. You have to get out, so you can punish those who did this to you. Think, Spook."
"Window,"
Spook croaked, turning to the side, crawling toward one of them.
"Boarded shut," the voice said.
"You saw this before, from the outside.